first question is basically it's about the tetra arising of the quadrants, and the question is, does it not arise in the space of undivided and omnific awareness? So instead of reading the entire question, I just want to kind of give you guys the gist of what the question is, and the reason being, it number one saves us time, number two, these questions all kind of do relate to each other. This is a question regarding the relationship between the four quadrants and what we're calling tetra arising, which is on the relative side of the street in what's called the Two Truths Doctrine, and its relationship to the absolute side of the street in what can be named the Two Truths Doctrine in relationship to reality. I'll let Clint unpack that entire concept, and I won't get into it. But
let me jump. Let me just do that real quick, because sure. I don't want to spend too much time given the time constraints here. Relative and absolute, guys. They're based on this thing called the Two Truths Doctrine. I believe it's rooted in South Asian Buddhism. I can't say who came up with it first. That would be a question for Ken. We're talking about, we've got a realm, a relative realm of manifestation and suffering. And that's the realm we're all playing in. That's the prison, as it were. And from a spiritual perspective, you know, the path of most traditions is to find your way out of the prison, okay, and into an absolute realm of undivided and omnific awareness, okay? And most traditions relate to this notion of relative and absolute as one is good and one is bad. And you can sense that, break out of the prison, bad, you know, into the freedom, good, of spiritual recognition and light. As I said in my welcome letter, read that again if you haven't read it, please do. We approach what we're doing here in a much more tantric notion. A lot to say about Tantra. In short, Tantra is one of the paths that, and this is the same for Vajrayana, the same for a lot of Christian mystics, the same for certain flavors of Sufism, etc. We're not working to get rid of the relative realm in favor of the absolute. We're working as, hear me on this, individuations, right? Individuations manifesting in the relative realm, but we're individuations of a consciousness that is not fundamentally individuated, right? We're unique manifestations of God or spirit, yes, but we're also manifesting in the relative realm. So let's work with both. Okay, so there's just a brief bit on the relative realm, and just, I would say, certainly my bias, and probably Ali's as well, but bias towards not choosing one over the other. So Ali, go ahead and continue.
Well, also, I'd just like to add that sometimes the conceptualization of what integral theory is explained this way. If we pose the question, for instance, what is consciousness? The relative answer to that question, or the answer that includes discursive, temporal, logic, and truth, is the four quadrants and all the details that come along with them, like levels, lines, states, types. But basically, the four quadrants is the relative answer to the question, what is consciousness? What is ultimately awareness? And the absolute side of the street, the answer to the question, what is consciousness, is actually not an answer, but a pointing to or a placeholder, and it's called Satori. And so that's another way to conceptualize it. I'm getting the sense that folks are increasingly understanding that or starting to realize that integral theory is more and more starting to look like a conceptualization as opposed to a purely contemplative practice. And we are 100% cognizant of this. And the point that Clint is making ultimately is this conceptualization is actually necessary, not only in the relative realm, but to be able to include the relative realm. Because awareness, purely in and of itself, and we'll get to all these terms once we hit our course on states, and also somewhat on in our course on levels as well. Yeah. Ultimately, enlightenment in its integral definition includes both the relative world of form, which is ultimately what the four quadrants are expressing, and the absolute world of the formless. Mystical traditions tend to emphasize one or the other. They usually emphasize either purely absolute, or some of them are still essentially stuck in the relative realm and never find, as the question asks, one mind or omnific awareness. In integral theory, we actually do not consider full enlightenment anything short of the inclusion of the absolute, unchanging, emptiness and its union with the ever-changing and evolving and the tetra-arising world of form. Integral theory as a philosophy is an exploration of what is the most complex and inclusive way of understanding this world of form, and understanding the prison so accurately as to build a map of it that allows us to transcend the prison, essentially escape the prison. So that's all I'll say, and I'll pass it on to Clint because we're in an extremely short time.
Beautiful. That is so important. So thanks for those perspectives. I mean, you actually start moving into that. That's the second question here, and then into the other one. You know, and you're going to feel this, guys, and Dev Dash just happens to be bringing it up. They're like, but this quadrivial analysis thing he says is too mind-centered, right? What about the spiritual perspective? What about getting into this one heart, right, realization of omnific awareness or spirit or Godhead, by whatever name? And yes, like Ali said, the work we're doing, learning the aqua maps, is relative realm work. We're thinking, we're discussing, it's discursive, we're adjudicating truth, we're learning distinctions, we're engaging our mind. Here's why. Well, there's two points I want to bring about it, and this actually folds into Douglas's question. Because we've already, at some point, now I spoke to this directly in my welcome letter, but I imagine that you all have crossed this as well, or I just don't think you would have ended up reading Ken Wilber and taking this course. We value the notion of having a better map because we recognize we live in the relative realm of complexity and suffering and craziness and debt ceilings, like I was saying, and horrific shootings and stock markets and everything. Email and phone technology, good Lord. And yet we are, whether we are aware of it or not, or consciously engaging it or not, we are spiritual beings on a spiritual quest together to turn and full to awareness from which we all came. But we're returning.
Clint, I'm just going to have to interrupt and say that your voice cut off slightly, so folks may not have heard the first part of the sentence. So I'm just going to ask you to repeat that.
Sure. Thanks, Ali.
Absolutely.
So we are, whether we're aware of it or not, spiritual beings on a spiritual quest. Evolutionary unfolding is bringing us all back toward that one source from which we came. And when Ali said enlightenment from an integral perspective includes the relative and absolute, includes states and stages, levels or structures, what we're saying is that evolution through structures is bringing us back toward God. That is through the relative realm. And that is where this work is being done, of learning these maps and using our minds. But it's being done in service of two things. One, you know, just our ability to navigate through this craziness back toward God. And the demonstration there of why aqua is good, or what it helps, why it's helpful, is that, well, yeah, great, the map is big. And when we get to states, you'll specifically see Beto's question. He's talking about the thing that he wrote about it. How does the thing fit in the map? Help me better understand it, basically, is the essence of his question. Great, well, aqua can help you do that. What's the benefit of helping you understand, he asks specifically. How do I bring myself, as I'm experiencing this thing, which, let's just call it Satori, or some type of spiritual experience, how do I bring it into the world? How do I engage it with the lower quadrants, with culture and society? Well, great, if there's a map that'll help with that, what that means is that we're not going to have Beto, you know, all, you know, freaked out on a spiritual, in his own spiritual state, but never leaving his house. He can go into the world. He can return to the marketplace, like the 10th ox herding picture in Zen, with open heart and open hands, and he can help bring other people along their paths towards ultimate absolute recognition and enlightenment. So this map has that benefit. And second, and this goes into Douglas's question, he's basically asking, where'd the question go? I had it printed here. There it is. He's basically asking, I want to know if there's examples of how learning the integral approach in classes like this have a spiritual benefit to students. He says, I want communion with God, he says. I want to be closer to myself, my soul, my Atma. I want to have this work here serve my spiritual needs. So on that, what I have to say is this. Two things. Aqual, taken as a set of maps, as a theory that describes quadrants, levels, lines, states, and types, and all their corollary concepts and distinctions, is not, and I'm saying that with just all emphasis, is not a spiritual path. Do not mistake Aqual for a spiritual path. Ken's never said it was. He never acts as if it is. We try our best not to do the same, and I want you not to fall in the same trap. Because if you do, and people have, then you run into all these problems that you guys are correctly intuiting. It's overly cerebral. It's not a substitute for spiritual recognition. It's relative realm mapping technology. Don't confuse it, right, with these spiritual absolute arisings. However, like I said before, it is a map that includes and can help us navigate any spiritual path that we're on. Anyone. If you're a Buddhist, we'll help you there. If you're a Christian, we'll help you there. Why? Well, because most of us have these inclinations to, like, get the Christians and the Jews and the Buddhists not fighting with each other. So we want to say, you know what? Gosh, I swear to you, I think Jesus and Buddha were saying the same thing. I got kicked out of my youth group when I was 15 for saying that. That's when I first figured out that I was integral, whatever that means, right? Because I didn't agree. I couldn't reconcile that. Buddha and Jesus were saying too much of the same thing. Now, I have a map, and I can explain to you for 3 hours why and how, right? They were saying the same thing. And that's not the goal. The goal is not to sound smart, right? The goal is to better navigate reality. So yesterday, I'm sitting at Starbucks. My friends were having dinner. I was trying to finish an email, you know? And this woman, she's like, why are you working on a Saturday night? I'm like, oh, my God. I never stop working. I work with this philosopher. She's like, a philosopher? Who's that? We got into this conversation. And in 20 minutes, I helped her with the same problem using this map. She's engaging this church, and she's getting basically pushback for saying that these religions are saying the same things at their core. And I gave her a little bit of help, a little bit of navigation based on the map, and hopefully she can go back and have an easier time existing at that church. And maybe she could even talk to a few other people who have similar questions and concerns. And then she can help them have a better understanding. And the result there is possibly then, and this is the same for all of us, that can move you along your spiritual path. It can speed up, make more effective your spiritual work. That's how Aqua, you know, can aid our spiritual path. Right, that's the first set of points I want to make on this these questions. Again, Bayo's question a little bit in there, Douglas's question in there. The second set of points is that under this tantric notion of sort of this non-separation of relative and absolute, now we can use the distinction that makes them separate, right? But fundamentally, as I mentioned in my welcome letter, you know, non-duality is operating under the sort of the notion that, you know, form and emptiness, the relative and absolute, are not two, not one, not both, right? That they radically are the same one texture of arising. And our spiritual paths, many spiritual paths, not all of them, to be clear, many try to help you just basically come to realizing that, to point to that until you recognize that it's always already, you know, your fundamental beingness in the world. And that itself is very tantric. And as you deepen into seeing the world, the relative realm, through aqual informed eyes. Now again, I'm not talking about the pen and paper analysis that, you know, then Clinton Ali come in and pick on you and tell you where you're wrong, and, you know, I'm saying when this is embedded, and it's why we do those awareness exercises, both in the Essential Integral Course and in the inspiration lesson or page of each lesson. When you start naturally seeing the arising of every moment through a lens of aqua, what you're encountering is the most complete, the most holistic, the most accurate way of seeing the world that we know of at this time. Implicitly, that act of seeing the relative realm like that is an act of loving God and loving spirit in a third person way. And many of you probably heard another example of how aqua can help us on a spiritual path. You've heard of Ken talk about the three faces of God, that God has a first person face, a second person face, and a third person face. And then there's ways to honor and commune and, like Douglas is saying in his question, and interface with God or spirit. And again, incidentally, I like to say God probably because it's, you know, my background as a Christian, but replace that name with whatever you need to. We can and should and ought, right, to interface with a holistic God in three faces and not just choose one face. So the Buddhists generally want you to help you recognize that you are God. I am God. First person recognition. God and I are not two. A Christian contemplative prayer wants you to bow in reverent supplication and communion with a second person God. Speak to that God. I'm not talking about petitionary traditional prayer. God, I want a new car. Why'd you, you know, make me get laid off? No. Conversation with God as an intimate communion with spirit through a form of a contemplative prayer is a second person face of God. God is, spirit is, that great and beautiful other. And simultaneously, you're not separate from that other. I mean, this third person face of God is what I just, one example of it is what I just gave, is seeing the world in as much of its gorgeous fractalization into these crazy quadrants and levels and lines and states and types, because we're trying to serve the awakening of ourselves and others, and it helps to have a map of this crazy, messy, manifest realm. And when we encounter that craziness in all of its glory, and we see it clearly, and we see it authentically, and we can behold its beauty, and not just be like, oh, this yucky relative realm of suffering, and we say, God, this is gorgeous, and who am I, and how am I in this life, and what are these crazy people running around, and this is just so beautiful. It's honoring the third person face of God. It's honoring the complexity of manifestation. And that's literally just another face of God. And this is Ken's sort of using the quadrants to better understand God and spiritual practice. So it's an example of both of what I'm saying, how you can use Aquil to help you on your spiritual path, and how using your mind, right, to learn this stuff so that you can see the manifest world more clearly is actually one component. It could be one component of your spiritual path. It's the component of the third person face of God.